LA Talk Radio. That was the divine Felisa Latin Soul, bringing us into the mood for a new Max and Friends Sunday Suppers. This is going to be part two to last week's show, which was the guest. My mother, Gina Tucci, was here with the divine Jennifer English as my co-host. And we had a wonderful conversation about my mother's life and how she is the queen of Delmonico's. We're going to talk about that here tonight on Max and Friends. But before that, how are you? You know, it's a question that seldom we're really asked. How are you? In the intentions of really meaning it. So from my heart to yours, how are you? Welcome to the show. Tweet me at Max Tucci, Instagram me at Max Tucci, and let me know what's going on in your life. And be so kind to follow at the Delmonico Way, because, you know, that's where the magic happens. Speaking of the magic, I've got to let you all know what's going on this month of April. April 28th, I will be at Gabriel's Italian Steakhouse in Westport, Connecticut, 12:30 p.m. There's a luncheon there, the Delmonico Way luncheon. I'll be doing an author talk. We'll be selling the Delmonico Way, sublime, entertaining, and legendary recipes from the restaurant that made New York. And it will be a wonderful luncheon with an exquisite menu. So you can go right now onto at Max Tucci on Instagram under events. There's a link. You can click it. You can RSVP for the luncheon. Limited seats, so please do get those quickly. And then the 29th, in Bedford, there'll be an event honoring Clive Davis at the Bedford Playhouse. And the 30th of April, we're closing out the month, I'm still on this book tour, and I'm going to be in Rye, New York, at the Heritage, at the J Heritage Center in Rye, New York. You can go to my webpage, thedelmonicoway.com. We're going to have information up there. So I look forward to seeing you the end of this month, April, as the Delmonico Way tour continues. And I'm still working on the cocktail book, which is a lot of fun. I was asked this morning a question: how does it feel to be an author and a writer? And one thing that I said for sure is that I love it because I'm able to teach. And there's a beauty and intention when I'm writing this cocktail book about really going into the history of cocktails and celebrating them. You know, I'm not a big drinker. I do love to toast here and there, and I do love good drinks every now and then. But so it's fascinating to be able to learn about the spirits and the wines and the cocktails and the drinks of choice for centuries, and toasting. And why is it so important to toast? So tonight I toast to my co-host, the one and only, the Divine Gracie Award winner and James Beard Award winner, friend to the show, co-host to the show. As she's raising her glass to me, I raise my spirit to her and say welcome to my guest. My next guest needs no introduction, the one and only Jennifer English. Welcome back to Max and Friends.
Well, hello. I am so honored to be here and glad to be here and grateful to be here for part two of Mama Gina's story. I have been looking forward to this because where we left off was like the ultimate cliffhanger, but we know there's exciting and glamorous and delicious times ahead, and there's big moments and highlight moments and a true highlight reel of a life in the hospitality industry in a time and place that is, I think, about ready to have its close-up. We're going through a metamorphosis in the world of hospitality right now. Post-COVID, the industry is about to change in ways none of us actually knows what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's giving us the opportunity to look back on what great hospitality was, mm-hmm, and is, and how hospitality defines who we are as humans in the culture in which we live. And Gina had a front row seat, a backstage pass, and a work permit to do all. She was,
trifecta.
Was on the floor. She was in the back of the house. She was in the front of the house. She was in the news. She was with the guests. She was one of the guests. Her story, I have to tell you, is one of the legendary stories of the contemporary hospitality industry.
Right. And women in the hospitality industry.
Well, I was just going to say, and women, because it was Gina Tucci and Mary Tucci and your family that made it possible for women to take the roles that it has enjoyed and transformed us. Legendary places that we create together as a community do indeed lift and transform us. And I don't want to say another word. I want to give it to Gina.
Absolutely. We're going to welcome.
And it's an honor to be here, Gina. Thank you.
I love it. We're going to welcome my mom in just a minute. But you know, Jennifer, there was an interesting, I saw a show recently that was produced at the United Nations. Mm-hmm. And the tagline for the show was looking back, moving forward. Mm-hmm. And I think that is such an important thing to remember in hospitality now. Looking back, moving forward. We were just recently at a restaurant in Boulder, Colorado, Jennifer. And while we were there, the interior was exquisite. The attention to detail was the Delmonico way. There was a little disc that was for the fork and knife rest. It was exquisite. The cocktails at the bar had ice that looked like it was all etched and beautiful. It was just everything about it was opulent.
So then, you're describing intentionality. I just want to jump in and say that's intentionality.
However, because someone was hired to, let's say, stage that absolute beautiful venue, the service lacked, the food lacked, the attention to detail in service lacked, it broke my heart to the point where we were sitting there thinking, we are surrounded, Jennifer, by opulence. True opulence, true Delmonico Way style with elegance, sophistication, grace, intention, thought, and then the food. And, you know, my mother in the book, The Delmonico Way, we write her favorite recipe, which is, of course, risotto. My mother is the risotto queen, and she does it with either mushrooms or asparagus and beautiful cheese, you know, the Parmigiana cheese. And here we are, and there's a plate of risotto that my mother ordered, and there's foam on it. And there's pepperoncino on it, and the cheese is missing. And we were just like, oh, really? And my mother took a beat at that moment and said, you know, the things that she had learned in Delmonico's that were passed down from my grandfather and my grandmother to Mario and Mary to my mother, you know, she said, it was such a period of elegance. We'll let her speak. But before we bring her on, I want to just make a note, Jennifer, here on Sunday Suppers. Welcome all to the table tonight on Sunday Suppers. This is part two, where my mother is joining us at the table again, and we're so excited to join you at the table. But I want to just bring into the atmosphere, Jennifer. And, you know, I always save a seat for those that are no longer with us. Mm-hmm. Right. Tonight we have many seats. I've added one to the table for a woman by the name of Patricia Murphy. And Patricia Murphy was a restaurateur who opened 9 Patricia Murphy candlelight restaurants in New York and Florida over the course of half a century. Shortly after the Wall Street crash of 1929, she invested her last $60 in a small Brooklyn restaurant. Soon she was one of the most successful restaurant owners in the New York area, serving 1 million meals a year in 1956.
Wow.
Her signature item was the popover, a hot bread dispensed from baskets by custom service known as Popover Girl. So tonight, we remember on Sunday Suppers, Patricia Murphy.
You know, I'm glad you did that. And it's been actually a sad couple of weeks for us in the food world because we lost Raghavan Iyer, a dear friend to us both, who was instrumental in making the world of the cuisine of his origins, but his passion for curries accessible to millions. Yeah. His books are encyclopedic and as reliable as the sunrise and sunset. He was a triumphant fighter of a rare cancer and left far, far, far too soon. And then it must be noted that Mimi Sheridan.
Yes, I was going to say. At the age of 97.
This is not insignificant for a number of reasons. But again, one of the great ladies of the hospitality industry. I believe that time will prove through the study and appreciation of what it took to get where and there, that more and more women like Patricia Murphy, like Mimi Sheridan, like Gina Tucci, like Mary Tucci, we'll get their eventual due, because you cannot have gotten to where we got to together without recognizing their achievement. Mm. And it's time. It's just time.
You know,
I have to say what a privilege it is to be able to have this moment with Gina Tucci.
Indeed, it is. And for those that don't know who Mimi was, I do please take some time to Google her. There's a lot about her. She just passed 5 days ago at the age of 97. She was a New York Times food critic. While we're speaking of food critics and remembering them, Jennifer, we also have to remember Gail Green, who passed just last holiday season. So lots of seats at the table for those that are not with us in person.
And so I have to say, when Max and I, who have been friends and shared many microphones together, had the dream of bringing not just the Delmonico way to life, but the spirit of the Delmonico way to life, that meant family dinners, family suppers, Sunday suppers, and so the show's on Sunday. And so all of this is a prelude to saying, welcome to Sunday Suppers, a dream shared by Max and I, who are in your service and at your service. And it is our extraordinary privilege to lay this table and welcome you and give you the seat that we save each and every week for the guest of honor. And that's you.
That's you. And Jennifer, before we bring Mama Gina to the table and we prepare this seat for her, if you missed last week's show, please, you can check it out on Podbean, on all podcasting platforms. My mother started to speak about her life, being born in Lithuania during World War II, having to flee and become a war refugee, living in a displaced person camp. We spoke about food. One thing we didn't speak about, though, was the potato. We spoke about it, but the potato and the chicken feet. And of course, we spoke about dandelion and the soups that my grandmother made. And then we were speaking about my mother's journey into fashion, into the fashion industry, from Roberto Di Camerino to Maximilian Furs to Jaeger to Revlon, and how my mother was a woman's wear daily, really a staple for women's wear daily. She was one of the first at the Fashion Group International member. And so tonight we're going to pick up on her story. Last we spoke, it was my mother arrived to New York. She was in Brooklyn. They had their experience of their first Thanksgiving, where they thought it was going to be inside of her aunt's wonderful townhouse. In fact, they were fed in the basement and leftovers. So tonight we're going to lift the energy up because we're going to bring back the Queen of Delmonico's, my mother, the one and only Gina Tucci, to Max and Friends and Sunday Suppers with Jennifer English. Welcome, Mama Gina.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, love. It's so exciting to be with you. Your stories are so compelling. They're exciting, they're evocative. And when you speak, I see the movie playing in my mind. Thank you for being so generous in sharing this, because it could very easily be that you want to only focus on the forward, because I know you're passionate and curious and always looking forward, but you're being very generous in coming and taking us back. Can you share with us one thing that you want to emphasize about how important it is for us to remember where we come from in order to move forward? Why do you think it's so important for us to have a conversation like this to remember?
Well, I think it sets your pace in life, to be grateful, to extend yourself to other people as far as food and friendship are concerned. To me, that's very, very important. And I've taught that to my children, and Max, so you can understand how I feel.
Now, Mother, let me ask you. When you were there's where do we start, Jennifer? Where do we start? There's so much to talk about. Jennifer, your mic is on mute. Just let it go. There we
No,
go.
I want to make sure, Gina, take us back to an America that few of us remember from anything other than the movies. Take us back to the feeling of the exuberance, of the optimism, of the power and dynamics and creativity that was that New York that you came to after the wars. And now we're talking that we're into the 50s and 60s. Talk about this exciting time. Everybody knows, what the swinging London scene was like then. What was New York like then? How did it feel?
Well, in the 60s, I graduated from high school, and I was had a passion to be an interior decorator and go to FIT. So I was taught by my parents when we came to America that this was our land of opportunity and that we had to have patience to learn the new language and to have respect for America and love it. And to this day, I remember how important that was to me, to have my new home, my new opportunity, and to live in a free country. It was the greatest gift that we could ever have had.
Mom, let me ask you a quick question. You know, when you were growing up in Brooklyn in the 1950s, can you just take us down memory lane? What do you remember about food in Brooklyn then?
Well, I remember my mother cooking it. That's what I remember.
Tell us what she prepared. What did she use to prepare?
Well, you know, I told you last week that, you know, my father on his first salary brought us tip-top bread and a gallon of milk. That was our first wonderful supper that we had. Then, of course, when we had our own apartment, my mother would prepare Lithuanian food, and which is borrowed from everywhere. We had potato pancakes. We had kugel. My mother always made, and I remember this because of Easter, that was yesterday, that we spent at my daughter's house, and she kind of took over the reins of serving Easter dinner, which she did a fantastic job. And my mother would make this, it's called vinaigretas, and it's done with beans and beets and herring. I know it doesn't sound too great. And herring, and then chopped up egg, the yellow and the white separately, and then parsley. And it was made into like a round ball. It was just unbelievable. And I really have to try to make this myself again.
That sounds delicious. It sounds like something my grandmother would have made.
Yeah, well, you know, there were a lot of Jewish people that lived in Lithuania, and they brought their recipes to Lithuania, and I believe that's how we really got the potato latkes. But, you know, of course, the Lithuanians say, no, they discovered it, and they're the ones that put the sour cream, and the lucky ones put the caviar on top.
How delicious. So, Mother, do you remember your first experience in a restaurant or a diner in Brooklyn?
Yes, I do. It was a pizza place on Church Avenue in Brooklyn. And we never had pizza before. So, you know, this was a very interesting evening. And we had pizza. And it was absolutely fabulous. Because we go back to Germany again. Occasionally, we would get some pasta. And we never knew how to fix it. You know, we just had plain pasta, and it was awful. So when the restaurateur said, well, do you like some pasta? My mother goes, oh, heavens no. And he says, why? She said, because it's so disgusting. There's nothing on it. And he served us the first bowl of pasta with a delicious sauce and then the Parmigiano cheese. And I could still taste it. It was so wonderful.
We're going to have to do that for lunch, Mother, tomorrow.
Don't you love stories where the food memory is so visceral that someone said, I can still taste it? Mm. And don't you love going to new places today, knowing that that might be the place where someday you'll tell the story, I can still taste it?
Jennifer, what's a place that you can still taste?
Oh, Galleria Umberto in the north end of Boston, where I used to go for a pizza with my grandmother. And she lived right in the heart of the Italian section of downtown, and it was right by the harbor. And there's an Italian family who operates in Osteria. They're open from approximately 11 to 2, and when they run out of food, they run out of food. The James Beard Foundation, after all these years, recognized it as an American regional classic. And they serve these great sheets of pizza in a pan that's square. They'd slice them into rectangles, and if you're lucky, you'd get the corner. Which was cheese. I can tell you exactly how that slice tastes, the same way you're telling me you can still taste that pasta. To me, that is such a wonderful memory.
You know, it's funny that the commonality we all share is Italian food right now, because mine also, Mom, you'll appreciate this, Mama. You remember when we go in Firenze to Ciro and Sons, and they make the lobster spaghetti.
Oh,
that way the lobster is presented, and the way that the, you know, the cherry tomatoes, and you know, I don't eat cherry tomatoes in the United States. Jennifer knows that too. That's why we had the wedge salad with Lagaluids with figs. But so when we're at Ciro and Sons, just the way it's presented and the texture of the pasta and the lobster, literally, I can taste it right now. And mommy, when are we going back to Italy to enjoy it?
I hope tomorrow.
No, it's wonderful. So mommy, let's talk about the fashion industry, because you all, when you went to New York, you became a model, and then you, from a model, you turned, went into the fashion industry. But you traveled a lot from London to Paris to Germany. So tell us about the way that food kind of welcomed you into each country. Do you remember dining in Paris for the first time?
Oh, my goodness. Of course I do. I was staying at the Plaza Athénée, and I was working for Revillon First. And I was very fortunate to have an incredible mentor, Jacques Horan, that really gave me the opportunity to become a fur buyer, and taught me how to be a manager, and taught me how to be a vice president. And I remember that I ordered breakfast, and they came with this beautiful, did you say something, Max?
No.
And they came with this beautiful setting, a white tablecloth and flowers, and I had ordered coffee, and I ordered a croissant with jam, and of course, being Lithuanian, I had to have some ham with some fat on it. And I remember how beautiful it looked. And I still can see the table. And I'm going back to 1963, I think, or four. And I still can taste that jam and the coffee and the service and the beauty. The way they represented that breakfast was incredible. Now, that was my first taste of Paris. Oh, it was wonderful. Can you believe coffee and a croissant? I still can remember that.
I love that. And what about London? Do you remember the food experience there for you?
Well, it wasn't too pleasant. So let's skip that, because, you know, Brussels sprouts with nothing on them, just boiled. Oh, no.
Gina, when you would be in New York at that time, and America was waking up to food, and we had Julia Child introducing us to French cooking and French cuisine. French cuisine was the epitome of the zenith of the culinary arts. And there was so much going on, and sort of fine dining was defined in some of those dishes that became the classic culinary lexicon from Escoffier, etc. Talk a little bit for me about discovering food at that time, because we as a culture began to discover that food and hospitality were a stage upon which we could have exciting life experiences the same way movies and theater and the other fine arts. In other words, the culinary arts really took their place in America in the fine arts world. And you were already appreciative of this. Can you talk a little bit about waking up, the America waking up in the culinary world at that time?
Well, I tell you, I was very fortunate to have boyfriends that would take me to incredible restaurants. At that time, we went to Orsini's. I don't know if anyone remembers Orsini's, and we had incredible Italian food with the most delicious wine. And you know, at the beginning, we always had cocktails. It was always a martini or two martinis, and women never really drank wine at the beginning. When we sat down, we would have a drink, and then we would order some wine with our main meal. And I remember the service and the attention that Armando Orsini gave his clients. And the waiters, you know, you never talked to them and they never talked to you. They would serve you if you wanted something. You know, you would get their attention. But the food, the way it was presented and the flavors, it was lovely. We would go to Le Pavillon and we would go to Côte Basque and many other restaurants. And again, it was tasting the delicious food of France and drinking the wine that went with the food. It was an experience. It was a delight to go out. From our last experience that we had at a fantastic restaurant that had the worst food in the world, it disappointed you. I mean, I was sitting there and I couldn't wait to get out. Yet we were with fabulous, funny people and conversation was great, but everything was a struggle. A struggle to get a glass of wine, a struggle to get water. That shouldn't be happening.
Tina, when you were just mentioning names like Le Pavillon and the Côte Basque, it was as if you were reading the entries in the Culinary Hall of Fame. And so when you mention these kinds of places, it just begs for your first trip to Delmonico's. What was the first trip to Delmonico's like for you?
Well, since I had been to so many restaurants and in Manhattan, I wanted to go to Delmonico's. So I went with a friend, and when I walked in, the lighting, the flowers, the pink tablecloths, the candlelight on the table, it was all silver and pink, and it was just mesmerizing. It was such a beautiful restaurant with the dark, rich wood. And a matter of fact, I think that's when I first met Mario, but obviously we just said hello to one another. And we had oysters Rockefeller. I remember exactly. We had oysters Rockefeller, we had champagne, and then we had the Delmonico steak. Oh, it was heaven. It was totally heaven. The service was impeccable. Everything just flowed like an, you know, it's like a conductor and conducting an orchestra. Everything just flowed so beautifully. So that was my first Delmonico experience.
I love that, your first experience, Mother. So for those of you who are tuning in tonight, welcome to Max and Friends. This is Sunday Suppers. I'm your host, Max Tucci. My co-host is the divine Jennifer English. My guest tonight, the guest of honor, is my mother, Gina Tucci. We're talking about her role as being the Queen of Delmonico's. Now, Mom, when you said your first experience, let's expand a little bit on that with the grandeur and the size of Delmonico's. Had you been in a restaurant that grand or big before in America?
Yes, well, I think it's the Pavillon. That was a fairly large restaurant. And in those days, those restaurants really gave you service.
And on that. What was the service like at Delmonico's when you first entered the restaurant? How was the welcoming? Did you feel the hospitality?
Oh, absolutely. There was a delightful man by the name of Mr. Biondi, and he would greet us. He greeted us at the door, and we had the reservation, and he would lead us to sit us down. Very pleasant man. Gave us the menu, and he, you know, said, take your time and enjoy the beauty of this restaurant. So, you know, this is what you expect. You expect good service. You expect people to your waiter to have a clean uniform on. Everything had to be absolutely perfect. And as I noticed, it was. In most restaurants, the ones that had a good manager, a good chef, had good waiters, they were taught how to take your recipe, not your recipe, but your what you wanted to eat. it there was some magic to it. Now, you know, they just slop you down and they throw the menu at you and the hair flipping all over the place. oh God, it makes me sick when I think about it, you know.
You know, I want to bring up a quote, Mother, from the Delmonico Way that I write in the book. It says, Mario, who's my father, Mario often said that staff should be like fine antique furniture, standing elegantly to the side, never interrupting. So from your experience at Delmonico's, Mom, did you ever feel at one of those dinners that you had that one day you would be the queen of Delmonico's?
Oh, God, never. Although when I did see your father, I thought he was a sexy Italian, but that's as far, that's as far as it went, because I had a very sexy boyfriend.
Now, let's about the courtship, because I write about it in the book and how Mario would literally get, when you started dating, ounces upon ounces of caviar. But talk about your courtship with Mario and how Delmonico's played such an important role in that courtship.
Well, obviously, I was always at Delmonico's. After work, he would send a limousine to pick me up and bring me down to Delmonico's to have dinner with him. And it was always a wonderful Negroni or a terrific martini that I was taught how it was made with Noli Prat vermouth and great olives, not those little stinky little ones with the little pimento inside. Oh, when they bring me that, it's disgraceful.
And a chilled glass, right, Mother?
Oh, sure. So, and of course, he would always have all these oysters and clams and lobster and a platter full of this food that was just out of this world. And
caviar. Tell us
about
the caviar.
God, don't forget. How can you forget about the caviar? It was out, served beautifully on ice. It was a dream, a total dream.
And when did that dream become a reality that you were like, you know what? I'm into this Mario Tucci.
Well, it took some time and a lot of oysters and caviar. But I loved the dating of the way your father, you know, did things. Whenever he would make a drink, his heart was in it, and he enjoyed the fact that you enjoyed it so much. He was just a very kind, generous person, and I don't know. Slowly, I kind of, you know, fell in love with him. There, Max. That's about your father.
All right. Jennifer?
This is extraordinary. A front row seat to one of the great romances in the hospitality industry of the 20th century that has led to this moment on Max and Friends. Let me do a quick reset. This is Sunday Suppers with Max and Friends on LA Talk Radio with the one and only Max Tucci and his extraordinary mother, the legendary Gina Tucci. Gina Tucci, welcome back.
Thank you, Jennifer.
I'm loving this story. And as you're telling me about the martinis and the oysters and bravo, I'm thinking, Max, are you hearing in her words of wisdom tips for young people who don't have a Gina Tucci to guide them into a really delicious life?
Absolutely.
As I'm listening to Gina sharing her tips, how to make the perfect martini. What I almost want to go to you, Gina, and say, can you teach me things like how to order a martini so that I get a really perfect martini? And of course, you just did. That's something really special. How did you come to, is that part of the gift of the love that came from Mario? That through the sharing and the hospitality that he was giving the world, that you learned so much. Can you talk about how we pass that on? How do we capture that and share that now?
Well, I tell you, it's I don't think it's very easy to do because, you know, people accept whatever is given to them and they think it's fantastic. And If you don't know any better, well, it's sad, but you should learn. You should learn, read books. Like right now, Max is writing this book on cocktails, and I thought I knew a lot about how the drinks were made, what kind of glasses you used. But, oh, the history, I never really knew where the cocktails came from. And he is doing such research to find out every detail of a drink, and it becomes more important. And I think that for the people, you know, that are drinking, they should really read the book. I think they'll understand more how to order a drink and what to expect from it. To me, that was very exciting because I had boyfriends prior to Mario, and you know, we just ordered a drink and it was okay. But when I met Mario, no, it was not okay. It had to be in a special glass, special ice, special ingredients. And that was what was important.
Mother, there's a word that Jennifer uses to describe ice, which I love so much, and I've adapted into my daily routine. And she says robust, robust ice. I just love the imagery of robust ice and good, clean, clear ice. But you know, Jennifer, I would love to just read from the Delmonico Way because we gave honor to my mother in the book. And there's on page number 30, it's called the Gina Di Martini. Now, why do we call it the Gina Di Martini? Because my mother's first husband was a wonderful man, Bernard Di Martini. And so growing up, we always joked that my mother had gin in her name and went as Gina. And then with her married name, it was Gina Di Martini. So in the book, we gave Gina Di Martini. And I write, my mother, Gina, is known as the Queen of Delmonico's. Before she became a Tucci, she was a Di Martini. And with gin being part of her name, it is appropriate for me to name a gin cocktail in her honor. Her Majesty is very particular about the rules of her martini. One, Mother, you say, never freeze the alcohol, as freezing it gives it a muted taste. Number two, use only Noilly Prat vermouth. And number three, if the martini glass isn't chilled, don't waste the gin or my time. The Gina Di Martini from the Delmonico Way. So Jennifer, you can imagine how much fun we had writing this, the first book, and now the second book.
And of course, when you're having a martini at Delmonico's back in the day, Gina, what was your toast that you would share with your friends when you'd be in one of the most dynamic, exciting, bustling, convivial rooms of all time? It was exciting. It was crackling with energy and fun and joy. When you're in that space, how did you toast with your friends?
Well, we toasted to love and to a good dinner.
The simplicity. Mother, let's talk about the celebrities that you encountered throughout your career. Let's start with Cary Grant. We're going to play a name game. So Jennifer, I'm going to give you some celebrity names and just give us your remembrance of the story. So Cary Grant is the first one.
Oh, my heavens, was he handsome and gorgeous and delicious. Oh, when he held my hand, that was it. That was it. I would not wash it for a week. And such a charming, he was so charming. And he noticed things about you. I had this very pretty little black crepe dress on. And where did you buy it? And I was ashamed to tell him that I bought it at Gimbel's. At the time, but he really was a delightful, charming man. Just, well, that's all. Charming is his middle name.
There were so many important political figures that would dine there. They say that Delmonico's was the restaurant of presidents, and regardless of politics, certain politicians were more delicious and dynamic than others. Who were the politicians that when they came in the room just stopped?
Oh, heavens. Well, there were a lot of politicians that came in. You know, I don't think you ever talked about the Rockefellers, Max.
We did speak about them in the book. But, you know, that brings me to JFK, Jennifer, because JFK was often there. But, Mother, tell us your experience and be truthful and candid about Jackie O.
Oh, Jackie, no. You You're not going to put me
go
on
there,
the spot.
Mother. Go there, go there, go there. Because if not now, when?
Well, I actually, you know, I don't know why people just thought she was so beautiful. She was a very attractive woman. I think that her voice didn't fit her body because she had these huge hands and these big feet. And she never was real to me. She was always very pretentious, but I'm not going to go any further about that because a lot of people, you know, admire her and love her and think she was the greatest first lady that we've had, which in a way is true. She did bring a lot of class into the White House. You know, when you think about Mamie Eisenhower and her little bangs,
rarely a good look on anyone. Listen, Gina, before we run out of time, people used to say my mother looked like Elizabeth Taylor. And while my mother was beautiful, nobody looked like Elizabeth Taylor. Did you ever meet Elizabeth Taylor at Delmonico's?
Oh, yes. Oh, my heavens. I had the fabulous, fabulous time with her. My daughter was born. This was November in 1976. And at the end of November, I was at Delmonico's and Elizabeth Taylor was there and we were talking. And I said, oh my heavens, I think I'm going to have to go home. I have to nurse my daughter. And we talked for a good 45 minutes about nursing and children, and all I kept looking were as her eyes and her beautiful tiny hands and her little feet. She was mesmerizing. And she never met me before, and she was telling me how she nursed her children. So it was an incredible experience.
I love that Delmonico's brought you and Elizabeth Taylor together. Mommy, we have to talk about Paul Newman because, you know, he was such an important figure and also in the culinary industry and hospitality and giving back. So tell us your remembrance of Paul Newman.
Well, I remember he came down on a motorcycle from Westport. Which I was mind-boggling that he would even risk doing that. He was also a very, very handsome, very, very kind man. He was another handsome person to meet and to be able to enjoy a small conversation.
When we hear the stories of these celebrated people in this moment in time, I think it's really important to remind everybody that Delmonico's through each of the decades was the place where notable people went because they understood through their connoisseurship that not only was the food going to be incredible and of course the setting incomparable, but it was the magic of being welcomed so that conviviality could happen, that joy of breaking bread together and celebrating together, making a party together. Can you talk a little bit about how that legend of signature philosophy, style of Delmonico's, kept growing and inviting and welcoming guests through the decades? Because this wasn't just something because it was a glamorous time in the 60s or the 70s. This kept going for a very long time. Can you talk about that signature Delmonico's welcoming hospitality fun style?
Well, you know, I think a lot of the people that went to Delmonico's, especially the Wall Street gentlemen, you know, they've had a hectic day and wanted to relax and have a wonderful drink and just enjoy having that drink and then perhaps sitting down and having that wonderful Delmonico steak. And it kind of lifted you out of your hard day. And it just puts you in another frame of mind. And all you did was sit there and enjoy the drink, enjoying the food. That was that really, I think, gave people the incentive to be in a beautiful place. Of course, we had violins playing. The atmosphere was very romantic at night. So I think it just gave you that, what you needed to end the day with.
I have another big question for you to sort of loop us back around to where we started our conversation today about the legendary history of which you were, of course, the Queen of Delmonico's. We said that in order to move forward, we have to look back with appreciation and bring those things that help define us, but that become essential, bedrock elements of where we go next. If somebody were, you know, grabbing a few things because that was your only chance to grab them before you like jumped off the Titanic into a lifeboat, right? Like, if there are only a few things you could grab, what are the one or two things we can grab from the Delmonico's legacy and experience that you were instrumental in creating and persevering and sustaining through time that you think are essential for us to bring into the future of the restaurant and hospitality industry?
Well, I think what's important is when you first walk into a restaurant and, you know, you're greeted with respect and with gentleness. Now you walk into a restaurant and some girl is sitting there and she goes, "All right, you know, you'll be served in, you know, just wait a minute, whatever." That doesn't set you off for a lovely dinner. You want to be greeted with kindness, with respect, with a happy face. That to me is like the number one step in the restaurant, is when you walk in and there's a person that greets you properly.
You are so right.
I love that you said that, Mother. You know, and Jennifer, for a lot that do not know, my mother was that person at Delmonico's in Greenwich, Connecticut when we had that restaurant. You know, her smile welcomed so many people, from Vic Damone to Ivana Trump and to all those that resided in Greenwich, Connecticut during a time when Greenwich really didn't have fine dining. So my mother was that person. So if anyone knows firsthand on welcoming someone, it's Gina Tucci. Mother, you know, I have to talk about this because we're going to have to wrap up, Jennifer, in just a moment. But I wanted to end this note, obviously, with a huge amount of gratitude and thank you for joining us on Max and Friends, both Jennifer and my mother, Gina, to Sunday Suppers. But I wanted to talk about the Power Lunch, Jennifer, before we go. Because this coming week, on April 20th, we have to revisit the time of April 20th, the date 1868. And in chapter 2 of the Delmonico Way, my mother helped me write this chapter. And it's called The Power Lunch. And it starts like this. The term power lunch was coined by Esquire Editor-in-Chief Lee Eisenberg in a 1979 article about the then new lunch scene at the Four Seasons in Midtown. But a century prior, Jane Cunningham Crowley, founder of the Sorosis Club, a philanthropic women's club, arranged for the club members to lunch at Delmonico's on April 20th, 1868, resulting in the first women's power lunch. Power lunches have been served at Delmonico's ever since. For example, on April 20th, 1955, 87 years after the first women's luncheon at Delmonico's, Mrs. John Mayers, chairman of the Women's Division of the March of Dimes, organized a special benefit art exhibit and auction at the restaurant. Later, Delmonico staged a week-long special 150th anniversary celebration of the Sorosis Club Luncheon. The menu, created by Prune chef and owner Gabrielle Hamilton, featured beef bouillon and had salads and soft-shell crabs with asparagus and bruleed rice pudding. And the chapter goes on to teach about power lunches and what it meant for women to be able to dine for the first time unaccompanied by men. So on that note, we're going to end the show. I'm going to ask you the first question, Jennifer, and then Mother to you. Jennifer, do you remember the first time you dined unaccompanied by a man or a woman by yourself?
Wow, what an interesting question. Yes. It may not be the first time, but it became my gift to myself as someone who, from a very young age, loved this business, loved this industry. It was almost a tribute to my great-grandmother, who was the night room service manager at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Boston. Her name was Kay Williams. She taught me from the time I was about 4 or 5 and took me in the back of the house for the first time. And when I say that, I say that because you know how it imprints on you. As a young person, you were in back of the house at Delmonico's, so it makes you who you are. In appreciation of all that gave me, every year on my birthday, for lunch, no matter what day of the week it fell on, I took myself to a place in Boston that served Sol Meunier. And I would have a glass of rosé and Sol Meunier by myself for my lunch. And this was after my granny was gone, but we went together while she was still with us. But I would go to Du Barry restaurant on Newbury Street, or I'd go to Maison Robert or Petit Robert down by City Hall Plaza, because I had a very, just a true exquisite experience, not because it was fancy, but because it was exactly as it was supposed to be. And one could really appreciate how things were supposed to be. And when they're done by someone who knows what they're supposed to be and they do it the right way, that without speaking a word, just by being in the presence of the service and the intention of having everything be the right way, I think that's the loveliest gift one can give oneself. And as you and Gina were talking about going to a restaurant last week where the expectation everything was going to be the right way and then it fell, the chasm that's created in that disappointment is so palpable because it's so big that it's also happening so often now. It's becoming harder and harder to do. And so that's why it's important to have a conversation to remind people these kinds of places that make you look forward to your birthday, to have that bite of Sol Meunier or whatever your favorite food on your birthday might be, that if they exist, that you give yourself that gift to go there. That's my two cents about dining.
I love that.
By myself, but I am eager to hear what Gina has to say on this topic.
Yes, well, yeah. Mother.
You're not going to like what I have to say. But I never went alone to a restaurant.
I love that. And on that note, we have to wrap it. I love that we're wrapping it up on a good laugh. And, you know, just for the sake of conversation, I seldom mother. You and I share that same trait of never dining alone. But when I do, the one place that I love to dine by myself, there's two places in New York City. One is the Polo Bar, of course. And Nellie always comes and sit at the table. And also Donahue's. I could sit at Donahue's in New York by myself and have the best time ever. Like tonight here on Max and Friends. We had the best time. We must wrap it up. Mother, I adore you. Thank you for sharing your stories. For more information on my mother and her story, her life story, you could read some of it in the Delmonico Way. And she's working now on her book, on her autobiography. So that's going to be a fabulous read. From Dr. Zhivago to the Queen of Delmonico's and everything in between. Jennifer English, I love you. And thank you for joining me on Sunday Suppers tonight with my mother, Gina Tucci.
Max, thank you so very much. And to welcome all our friends to our table every Sunday for breaking bread and having a good chuckle and having a good cry and having a good morsel. It's our privilege to be here. And Gina, thank you so much. You inspire me. And
well, thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. It's really, I enjoyed it immensely. We should do this more often.
Mother, you'll be back to the table. And on that note, thank you all. Who's going to be at your table this week? Set some intentions while you set the table. I love you for tuning in. Until next time, remember to take life to the max. I'm your host, Max Tucci, for Max and Friends Supper, Sunday Supper Special Edition. We've got to go. I'm speaking so fast. We're wrapping it up, I promise. Good night and good karma, and take life to the max. Peace, good night, and love.